I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. That'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.
MSW Media.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Beans for Friday, April 12th, 2024. Today, we are but three sleeps away from the first criminal trial of Donald John Trump. The Tennessee lawmaker that was trying to make marrying your cousin legal has lost his fight. President Biden has closed a gun show loophole and expanded background checks. A state prosecutor in Georgia has finally been assigned to investigate Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones for his role in the fraudulent elector scheme. The RNC is yet again fundraising off the big lie, and Republicans' sham impeachment of Gina Griswold falls apart. I'm your host, Allison Gill. Happy Friday. It's Fuglesang Friday on the Daily Beans. That means John Fuglesang is going to join me later in the show. We're going to talk about the 1864 Arizona abortion ban and subsequent ballot measure that will appear on the Arizona ballot this November to enshrine reproductive health care rights into the state constitution. Needs to pass by 50%, not 60. So that's very good news, which unfortunately followed on the heels of some extremely bad and dangerous news for women's rights and people's reproductive health care rights. Dana's out today. She is traveling to her birthday show tonight. at Sunshine Cathedral in Fort Lauderdale. I believe there may still be tickets available. You can get them on her website, danagoldberg.com, if you want to go see her do like a full hour plus of stand-up. It's incredible to watch. She is truly a master of her craft. I really recommend seeing her if you haven't yet. You know that her and I will be hosting Daily Beans Live on July 10th in Portland and July 11th in Seattle. There are a few tickets left to those shows. I think they're going to sell out pretty fast here. So you may want to go online to allisongill.com and get those tickets. And that's just a couple of a bunch of shows that I'm going to be doing across the country for the Daily Beans and MSW Media. Thanks to our patrons, we're going to see you all on April 20th in DC. I know a bunch of you are coming out to our, I guess, MSW Media meet and greet we're having. I'm buying you dinner and we're going to have cocktails and mocktails on me. And we're going to have all sorts of fun guests that you can meet and hang out with and talk to, including Andy McCabe and Pete Strzok, Glenn Kirshner, Charlotte Clymer will be there. Harry Dunn, if he's not at doing campaign stuff, he's going to do his best to be there. Danny Hodges, Olivia Troy. It's going to be an incredible night. Feel free to dress up and we'll see you there. And if you didn't make it to the April 20th party, there is a show that's going to be in DC with pretty much all the same people, Glenn Kirshner, me, Pete, and Andy, and that's August 16th at Hamilton Live. There are a few tickets available left for that. Get them while you can. Anyway, after all that, thanks for sticking around with me today. It's just me solo, so I appreciate you hanging in there and letting me get through all those announcements. Three sleeps away from the first criminal trial of President Donald John Trump. I vowed years ago when I started the Mueller She Wrote podcast that I would not rest until I saw him exiled or in prison. And we may be very close to that. Remember, this set of crimes, this investigation, this criminal trial started with the Mueller investigation. And it was some of the first things that Mueller looked into with regard to Cohen and the hush money payment and the catch and kill schemes that included David Pecker and the other guy, what's his name, Harvey something or other. There are going to be witnesses in this case, along with Hope Hicks, Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, who was a victim of a catch and kill scheme as well. You'll remember from the Southern District of New York when Barr was in charge that he really tried to keep Trump's name and even the name Individual One out of the Cohen indictment and really quashed that investigation into Donald Trump, made it impossible almost to prosecute. Southern District of New York tried, ultimately did not. They did put Michael Cohen in prison for 3 years for that crime, and he was directed by Donald Trump, Individual One, that was the conspiracy. It's hard to charge a conspiracy with just one person, but they did. Then it was handed off to the Manhattan District Attorney, who at the time was Cyrus Vance. He, even though he said was going to make a charging decision before he left office, did not, and then passed on that investigation to the current district attorney, Alvin Bragg. And here we are, almost 8 years later, 8 years later almost, since the commission of these crimes, 7.5 years. An investigation that started with the Mueller probe, ended up with the Manhattan DA, and we have jury selection just three sleeps away. So we're going to be reporting on that trial. I'm going to give highlights here on the Daily Beans, but we're going to be reporting on that trial in depth on Cleanup on Aisle 45. That's me and Pete Strzok. So you don't want to miss it. He was involved in the initial steps of this investigation when it was born in the Mueller probe. So you don't want to miss that coverage. So if you aren't yet listening to Clean Up on Aisle 45, now would be a good time to run over there and subscribe to that. All right, with that, we have a lot of news to get to today. So let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. All right, first up, and I think this is the story of the day. Not OJ, not whatever else they've been covering on mainstream media. I think this is the story of the day. So I'm putting it first. This is from Andrew Kaczynski at CNN. The Republican National Committee last week sent out a scripted call to voters' phones on behalf of the new co-chair, Laura Trump, saying that Democrats committed, quote, massive fraud in the 2020 election. It is the latest example of how the RNC under the former president's daughter-in-law is perpetuating lies about the 2020 election, even as prominent Republicans say the party needs to look forward to win in 2024. Quote, we all know the problems. No photo IDs, unsecured ballot drop boxes, mass mailing of ballots, and voter rolls chock full of deceased people and non-citizens are just a few examples of the massive fraud that took place. That's what the RNC call says. If Democrats have their way, your vote could be canceled out by someone who isn't even an American citizen, unquote. The claim of massive fraud in the 2020 election marks a significant shift in messaging for the RNC because lies about the 2020 election had not been a consistent theme in its messaging since Donald Trump left office. But the call's message is largely consistent with the views publicly espoused over the past 4 years by Laura Trump, who was elected as the co-chair in early March as part of Trump's takeover of the Republican Party. Laura Trump has a long history of echoing his election fraud claims, according to K-File, CNN K-File analysis of her past statements as a commentator and a surrogate for the former guy. Quote, I'm sure you agree with our co-chair, Trump, that we cannot allow the chaos and questions of the 2020 election to ever happen again, said the call, which was obtained by CNN's K-File from the anti-robocall application Nomorobo, which estimated 145,000 calls were sent with this message between April 1st and April 7th. It comes amid previous CNN reporting about RNC asking employees who were reapplying for their jobs whether they believe the 2020 election was stolen in an apparent litmus test for hiring. The RNC denied any such litmus test existed and then sent out these calls. Laura Trump and her new chair, Michael Whatley, succeeded. Drew McKissick and Ronna McDaniel, who had earned their ire of the former president from the former president because of his dissatisfaction with how the RNC handled claims of fraud around the 2020 election. Now, there's no evidence of widespread fraud, obviously, in the 2020 election, as even some state GOP election officials and former Trump Attorney General Bill Barr have acknowledged. The former president and his supporters filed more than 60 lawsuits in six key battleground states following the election and lost every one of them. And they have still not brought forth any evidence of cheating, the rampant cheating they continue to talk about on the campaign trail. But in the years since the 2020, and you know, I mean, we could add here that several lawyers have pled guilty to this scheme, saying it was all bullshit. But in the years since 2020, and that election, Laura Trump has continued to push the fraud claims. Her comments have been in line with those of her father-in-law, who successfully reshaped the GOP in his image and easily secured his third straight GOP nomination this year. Polling, for example, which I don't watch, but and from this story, shows that a majority of the GOP voters think the 2020 election results were illegitimate. A CNN poll released last September found 71% of Republicans said Joe Biden did not legitimately win enough votes to win the presidency. From November 20th to February 2024, Laura Trump propagated the narrative of Democratic cheating in the 2020 election. And even after she was elected co-chair and said claims of stolen election are in the past, she didn't repudiate those baseless accusations. Quote, well, I think we're past that. I think it's in the past. We learned a lot. Certainly, we took a lot of notes. That's what Trump said in an NBC interview when asked whether claims of a stolen 2020 election would be the official position of the RNC in 2024. Laura went on to tout lawsuits across 23 states, quote, to ensure that it's harder to cheat and easier to vote. I think what she means is that it's harder to vote and easier for her to cheat. While she did this while raising questions about pandemic-era voting procedures. In the same interview, Trump also added the GOP needed a trust mail-in voting. Now, neither the RNC or Laura Trump responded for multiple requests for comment. And, you know, this something that is not in this story that I think probably could have been or at least retold is the legal criminal scrutiny the RNC faced in the investigation into the coup by the Department of Justice. We know that subpoenas went out in 2021, shortly after Merrick Garland got there, for Sidney Powell's PAC and her fundraising, shortly followed by subpoenas going out to Trump's PACs, several rounds of them. And we know Ron McDaniel was questioned. And we know they tried to get Salesforce, which was a third-party vendor sending out emails for the RNC, to hand over emails and cooperate. They ended up dropping that and withdrawing the subpoena. Jack Smith withdrew the subpoena, signaling either he's finished with the investigation of wire fraud into the RNC and is not going to bring charges, or something else that we don't know. But either way, fundraising on the big lie could be constituted as wire fraud. Although the messages says, you know, they're a little more ambiguous than they were previously in 2020. They're saying this could have happened. This may have been the case. Probably very deliberate language from lessons they learned from the criminal investigation into the RNC in 2020. All right. Next up, from Maya Ward at Politico. The Biden administration is moving to expand background checks for gun purchases, fulfilling a key demand of advocates following the deadly shooting at the school in Uvalde, Texas. The final rule, expected to be submitted Thursday to the Federal Register by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, would eliminate a loophole that has allowed sales of guns without background checks of guns outside a brick-and-mortar store. The rule was issued under a provision of the 2022 Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. It requires that anyone who sells guns for profit must have a license, and that the buyers be subjected to a background check, including firearms at gun shows and flea markets. The administration has been working on the rule since last spring. Once publicized, it will take effect in 30 days. The so-called gun show loophole has for years allowed unlicensed gun dealers to sell firearms without background checks at gun shows, on the internet also, and out of their house. The new rule, the most sweeping expansion of firearms background checks in decades, will apply to more than 20,000 individuals engaged in unlicensed gun dealing and affect tens and tens of thousands of gun sales each year. An administration official told this to reporters during a call previewing the announcement. The single gap in our federal background check system, this one, has caused unimaginable pain and suffering. That's what Vice President Kamala Harris said on the call. The vice president noted the 25th anniversary next week of the mass shooting at Columbine High School, which was carried out with weapons purchased through the gun show loophole. She also pointed out the 2019 shooting in Midland and Odessa, Texas, where a man killed seven people and wounded dozens of others. A background check stopped the shooter from purchasing a gun at a sporting goods store in 2014, but later he got that AR-15 from an unlicensed seller he met online. After Congress passed the gun safety legislation in June 2022, following the shooting in Uvalde, Texas, the gun safety groups have pushed the White House to use it to expand background checks by clarifying which entities are considered, quote, engaged in the business of selling firearms. Doing so would not fulfill the president's plea for universal background checks, as it would not apply to all sales, including private transfers, but the rule's publication still marks a step forward in the administration's more incremental efforts to regulate gun sales through implementation of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. Quote, we know this doesn't get us all the way there, and this law can only do so much. And it's why the president is firm that the Congress needs to finish this job and make sure that we have background checks on all gun sales. That's what an administration official said. The final rule comes a year after the president issued an executive order directing Merrick Garland to develop and implement a plan to clarify the definition of engaged in business. The Department of Justice issued the proposed rule in September. The administration has also made an effort to release previously undisclosed firearms data, offering a fuller picture of the illegal firearms market in the U.S. The two parties are not the same. All right, next up, from Daniel Smithson at WBTV in Tennessee. A bill passed in the Tennessee House that would make it illegal to marry your first cousin in the state. That passed today, but it did not pass without argument from one lawmaker who pushed an amendment to make it legal for cousins to marry each other if they first received genetic counseling. The bill, as amended by Representative Gina Bolso, a Republican from Brentwood, would prohibit first cousin marriage unless the parties to the marriage contract received counseling from a genetic counselor licensed by the Board of Medical Examiners. Balso argued during a session that the bill could violate the Obergefell v. Hodges Supreme Court decision, which made same-sex marriage legal across the country. Balso said the bill was introduced as a public health-related matter, adding that the law needed to be passed to prevent cousins from getting married and conceiving a child that could have an increased risk of birth defects. Balso argued two men who are first cousins could get married without the risk of conceiving a child with birth defects. Quote, "Is there a public health issue with a male marrying a male first cousin? Obviously, I think the answer is no," Balso said, adding the enhanced risk of birth defects would also not be present for women who marry their first cousin. A female and a female, quote, could not conceive a child, unquote. Balso argued that the risk for birth defects in children conceived by relatives is low, between 1.7 and 2.8%, according to the Journal of Genetic Counseling. Therefore, he said, marriage between first cousins should be legal if they first receive a consultation from a genetic counselor. Quote, "There's an additional risk, but it's not significant enough to keep cousins from getting married." He said it's not as significant as some might have been led to believe. The bill banning marriage between first cousins was later passed in the House. Two Republican lawmakers, Balso and Monty Fritz from Kingston, were the only legislators to vote down the bill. They wanted to be able to have first cousins marry. The bill banning first cousins from marrying now heads to Tennessee Governor Bill Lee's desk to be signed.
What? He's a good kisser.
He is your cousin.
Yeah, but he's my first cousin.
Right.
So you have your cousins, and then you have your first cousins, and then you have your second cousin.
No, honey. Mm-mm. That's not right, is it? That is so not right.
And from Bill Rankin at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, State Prosecutor Pete Skandalakis, I hope I'm saying that right, he said Thursday he's going to lead the investigation into Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones's alleged role in trying to help the former guy overturn the 2020 presidential election in Georgia. He's going to do it himself. Skandalakis, executive director of the Prosecuting Attorneys Council of Georgia, that's the PACG, he was tasked 21 months ago to find someone to oversee the Jones investigation after DA Fonnie Willis was recused from the case. Instead of appointing a DA or a private lawyer to take the case, 21 months later, he's appointed himself. Skandalakis has been criticized, even made the defendant in a lawsuit for taking so long to appoint someone to lead this investigation. But he will now move forward on his own to determine whether Jones should be charged with criminal conduct. In a statement citing the rules of professional conduct for prosecutors, Skandalakis said no further comments will be made at this time. Jones, Burt Jones, who was a state senator back then, was one of 16 Republican officials who cast Electoral College votes for Donald Trump in December of 2020, after Joe Biden officially had been declared the winner in Georgia. Jones and the 15 others signed a document saying that they were actually the duly elected and qualified electors from Georgia. That was a lie. Jones also flew to D.C. on January 5th, the day before the insurrection at the Capitol, with a letter from then-Senator William Ligon. He's one of the leading election skeptics in the state legislature. He had sent him a letter. And Burt Jones flew it to D.C., and the letter asked Mike Pence to delay the count of the Electoral College for 12 days to allow for more investigation into the 2020 election. The letter said that hearings in the State House and Senate had uncovered extensive irregularities and fraud, claims that turned out to be false. Jones was supposed to give that letter to Pence during a dinner at the vice president's residence. Even though he attended the event, Jones did not give the letter to Mike Pence. Quote, "I was just reading him," he said of Pence, explaining to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution why he didn't give him the letter. He added that after talking to Pence's staff and observing the vice president, he said, quote, "There's no need to give him this," unquote. Now, Skandalakis is the former district attorney of the 5-county Cowichan Judicial Circuit. I'm probably saying that wrong, and I apologize. Please feel free to send us a correction. And became executive of the Prosecuting Attorney Council in 2017. He has handled a number of high-profile cases while heading the PAC. The PAC is the Prosecuting Attorneys Council. This includes his decision not to prosecute Atlanta police officers Garrett Rolfe and Devin Bronson for the killing of Rayshard Brooks at Wendy's in June 2020. Skandalakis was assigned the Jones case after Fulton County Judge Robert McBurney recused D.A. Fonnie Willis from overseeing the investigation into Burt Jones because Willis had hosted a fundraiser for attorney Charlie Bailey, who would become Jones's opponent for lieutenant governor in the general election. Jones won with more than 51% of the vote. McBurney, while holding a hearing on the matter, said the public had to believe the investigation was nonpartisan. Quote, "It's a what are you thinking moment," he said. "The optics are horrific," unquote. And then he recused Fonnie Willis from the case. In July 2022, McBurney removed her and her office from prosecuting the case involving Burt Jones. By law, the case was sent to Skandalakis, the head of the PAC. Apparently unable to find a suitable district attorney or a private attorney to handle the case in the last 21 months, Skandalakis has decided to take it on his own. But he took so long to do so, four Georgia residents, represented by Fayetteville attorney Wayne Kendall, filed a lawsuit against him in February to get a judge to order Skandalakis to hurry up and make the appointment. They filed for a writ of mandamus to compel the public official to do his or her job. Although the statute does not give a deadline for the PAC to make such an appointment, that case is still pending in Clayton County Superior Court, maybe dismissed as moot now. Georgia State University law professor Anthony Kreese, who's been a guest on our show, said Skandalakis' decision likely took so long for two reasons. First, he said, Skandalakis likely waited until Willis's investigation of the other defendants was complete, providing a blueprint for his own investigation and possible charges against Jones. Also, Skandalakis likely wanted to see how Judge Scott McAfee would rule on key preliminary matters, such as whether the racketeering charge passed muster or whether the elector's case should be moved to federal court. So that kind of makes sense. Wait around and see if this case is thrown out before you start putting taxpayer money into it. Now, I don't know anything about Skandalakis other than he's been doing these jobs for a really long time. But he said, quote, this is Anthony Michael Kreese. Professor Kreese says, quote, "You let the DA finish the blueprint for you and see how complicated legal questions shake out. You can then proceed in a more intelligent manner." So that does kind of make sense to me. Next up, from M.L. Nestle at Raw Story, a vote to impeach Democratic Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, also a former guest on our show, for her effort to boot former President Trump off the state's primary ballot, resulted in defeat on Tuesday, with three votes in favor for the resolution and eight votes against. Two conservative House members brought forward six articles of impeachment on April 4th, accusing Griswold of being too partisan, and they cited her, calling Trump an insurrectionist who deserved to be banned from running for office again. They concluded that her conduct constitutes malfeasance in office, dereliction of duty, unfitness for office, and abuse in the public trust. All for telling the truth. Quote, "We ask you to consider what was the true purpose of the Secretary of State using her power as the chief election officer to advocate for the removal of a candidate from the election ballot." That's what the Republican House Minority Leader Rose Pugliese? I have no idea how to pronounce this one. It's P-U-G-L-I-E-S-E of Colorado Springs. She said that. As for Griswold, she told Colorado Public Radio that the impeachment attempt was a sham endeavor. The effort to prevent Trump from appearing on the GOP primary ballot was spearheaded by six Colorado voters with the legal backing of a nonprofit that we know and love as CREW, the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Together, they sued Trump and Griswold in state court, alleging the former president had disqualified himself based on his actions leading up to the coup, where a mob, an insurrection happened. Mob of angry supporters convening at the Capitol to stop the steal exploded into a full-fledged riot where five people died. They cited the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. As we know, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, ratified in 1868, 4 years after the abortion ban in Arizona was written, and enforced in only a handful of cases in the last 150 years, it prohibits a person who took an oath to support the Constitution and then engaged in an insurrection from holding office again. We know how that turned out. Supreme Court decided Congress has to pass some sort of a resolution mechanism for keeping federal officials off the ballot. States can make their decision about state officials. But when it comes to U.S. Congress, Senate, Vice President, President, Congress has to make that choice. So Jenna Griswold, they tried to impeach her. That failed 4-8 in Colorado. So, all right, we have an excellent segment coming up. It is Fuglesang Friday, and I am going to speak with John Fuglesang about a few things, especially and including what's going on in Arizona right now. So everybody stick around. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It is Friday, and that means it's Fuglesang Fridays here on the Daily Beans, where I am joined by my friend, host of Tell Me Everything on Sirius XM Progress, Channel 127, weeknights, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific. And if you don't have Sirius, you can catch him on his very free and very amazing podcast, The John Fuglesang Show. Please welcome John Fuglesang. Hello.
Thank you so much. It's great to see you.
And you're on like a big old massive tour, so I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to come and talk to us.
Big old massive tour kicks off in Minneapolis this weekend and then goes all over the country. It's our first time doing the big Stephanie Miller sexy liberal tour with Live Nation. So yes, we will be coming to a town and throwing around merch somewhere near you.
Yes, and that Minneapolis is, I believe, the Pantages, which is one of my favorite theaters in Minneapolis.
One of my favorite theaters. Bob Dylan used to own it in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Amazing space.
Yeah. So you'll just have to do, you'll have to just talk like Bob Dylan the whole time.
Oh, people in all of Minnesota love when you just talk like Bob Dylan all the time, because that's they how they all sound. So yeah, they like that a lot. They respond well to it.
And Prince.
If you're landing in Minneapolis, just start doing your best Fargo accent everywhere. The locals find it hilarious. Trust me.
They really do, especially if you're out getting a drink at a bar. And yeah, they do definitely love it. Do not do that. So I wanted to talk to you this week about 1864 and what was going on in the country back in 1864. You know, I just rewatched my favorite show, one of my favorite shows, Deadwood, which took place in the 1870s.
I love that show. Season two of Deadwood is like one of the most perfect things that has ever existed in TV broadcasting. I mean, the whole show's great. It didn't get an ending, but then the movie was quite good that wrapped it all up years later. But season two of that show is like the most perfect year of television I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to get a feel for what it was like during the time.
Okay. So 56 years before women could vote, right?
56 years before women can vote. Multiple decades before Arizona even became a state. These were territory laws. And I wanted to get your thoughts because, again, we talk about the dog catching the car. We need a bigger vehicle than the car to describe what maybe the Cybertruck. I don't know. But the dog has caught something. And but I think the important thing to note here is the follow up story. The following day or two after the Supreme Court in Arizona allowed this law to go into effect is that while many Republicans are, you know, clutching their pearls on television and saying they support IVF and that this is out of touch, they went into chamber in Arizona and refused to repeal this law twice. So this is on purpose.
Oh, yeah. But you leave out. I mean, there's a lot that was crammed into these days, and it's such an incredible story. I mean, in 2016, Trump was all for a federal abortion ban. He sent a letter to all the fake Christian leaders because, again, I hate to always have to reiterate this, Allison, but just like I've always got to remind people that, yes, Hamas are Nazi terrorists, they're horrible. I've always got to remind people the Bible's not against abortion. God asserts that a fetus is property in Exodus 21. Life begins with first breath. Jesus never mentions abortion. Abortions are legal and free in Israel right now because Jesus's religion never banned them. So Donald Trump promises an abortion ban in 2016. As president in 2018 at the March for Life rally, he promises that he will sign a national ban. And then just last month, he was saying he would sign a 15-week ban. And this is the man who has ushered in the end of Roe v. Wade. And now he is witnessing the backlash. He's one of the few Republicans to actually pay attention to the backlash because these evangelicals he hitched his wagon to, they're not really big fans of observing reality to begin with all that much. And so now we're watching him begin to fall apart. He lied and said everyone wanted Roe to be repealed. Remember that? His little speech on Monday. He really thought he was getting ahead of it. He's terrified of mentioning mifepristone. The media doesn't ask him about it, but he releases this video on Monday bragging he ended Roe, lying that everybody wanted it. And then he lost the evangelicals when he said the state should decide. Then he lost the independents when he said the state should decide. Then he told the lie about the babies being born and then murdered to try to win the lunatics back. And then he had blown it. He made a calculated choice. It made him look scared. It made him look weak. It made him look like he was doing damage control and trying to please everyone. But the thing is, it doesn't matter if he means it. At this point, what matters is why Trump said it. So 2 days after saying abortion policy should be left to the states, now he says the Arizona Supreme Court went too far with this 1864 law. And he bragged again about ending Roe v. Wade and causing suffering to all these women. The difference now, as of this week, he no longer supports the abortion ban he stood up for so many times before. So he's now telling the evangelicals, who he needs, that he's fine with having all these abortions performed in some states. Go ahead and abort away. And he's telling the independents, who he also needs, that he's fine with abortion being totally banned even for rape and incest in these other states. In other words, he's telling everyone that he's terrified and he doesn't know what to do because he's finally realized, Allison, how stupid it all was.
Yeah, and here's the thing, you know, because he came out with his little video and said it should be left up to the states. Then when it was left up to the states, we come up with this 1864 law. Then Trump goes, oh, I don't like that very much. Uh-huh. People are asking him who would sign a national abortion ban. The media is asking, would you sign a national abortion ban if it gets to your desk? But actually what they should be asking is if he will sign protections for reproductive health care, given some states going way out on the wrong side of the, you know, the tree on the limb, way out on the limb to say, you know, we're going to go roll it back to 1864. Trump says he disagrees with that. Then he should be asked if he will sign federal protections for abortion, not if he'll sign a national abortion ban. So the media is kind of failing us there. And then we also see like normalization and both sidesing from the New York Times saying we have two imperfect messengers on abortion.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's all. Oh, what a horrible choice we've got. One's old with a stutter and the other one rapes people. How am I supposed to choose here?
We have somebody who's been promising a national abortion ban who comes out and tries to play six sides of the fence. And then we have somebody who's 100% going to bring back Roe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if he gets the Senate and the House that he needs to do it, to sign these protections. Not would you sign an abortion ban? Would you sign protections for reproductive freedom?
It's a great point. It's a great point, but he also needs to be asked about mifepristone and where he stands on this movement that's going on in his name.
He doesn't know what that is.
I know, but if I had to learn how to say ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine because of this hump, he can bloody well learn how to say mifepristone, Ms. Gill. Right is right. And he's hiding from it. He's terrified of it. Look, we've already seen this now three times. We've had the Arizona Supreme Court totally blow up in their face. We had mifepristone totally blow up in their face, and IVF is totally blown up in their face. The dog who caught the car party is really tired of this tire running them over again and again and again.
Yeah, I thought that the timing was pretty exceptional in Arizona, given that he said it should be left up to the states, and then bam, what happens when you do? And then the Republicans in the state house won't even consider, they table legislation or resolution to repeal the 1864 law.
That's right.
And, you know, and now we're here. I think the timing is pretty incredible. But something else happened from the Arizona Supreme Court. They have
I have more too. What do you got?
They have also ruled that enshrining abortion protection in the Arizona Constitution will be on the ballot in November, alongside legalization of recreational cannabis.
Read my mind, just like in Florida.
And so I think that, I mean, you know, we turned Arizona blue in 2020. I think they're Republicans in that state and the state house. We only have to flip a couple of seats in the state house to get the majority back. Are in for a rude awakening in November.
Let me tell you something. I think the Arizona Supreme Court could have just issued their ruling and called it, "Hello, Senator Gallego." And I would have gotten the point across, because the part we haven't mentioned yet, Ms. Gill, is that this is really bad for Carrie Lake more than it's bad for anybody else in the world, more than it's bad for women who are pregnant against their will in Arizona. This is going to drive up Democratic enthusiasm. And now that Arizonans can vote on the ballot measure in November, it shifts the powers away from the court and away from the politicians to the voters. And abortion rights have not lost since the end of Roe, when the decision has been up to the voters instead of the courts and instead of the politicians. This is going to be on the ballot in Florida. They're probably going to have it on the ballot in Montana, and they are putting it on the ballot in Nevada as well. It's a winner, and the Republicans are so terrified, they are speaking in tongues in the Capitol Rotunda.
Yeah, and in Florida, they do need 60% of the vote, but in Arizona, simple majority will get this thing passed. They needed 400,000 signatures. They have until July 3rd. They've got 500,000, and they're on track to double the number of needed signatures to get this on the ballot. So I'm pretty sure they'll be successful there.
And I'm, by the way, Ms. Gill, I'm not convinced it's going to pass in Florida. It's just going to force the Republican Party to spend tons of money they don't have, because Lara Trump is looting the RNC. They're going to have to spend so much more cash than they were planning on spending just to defend Florida.
Yeah. And we're going to come closer to Florida if we don't win it. We're going to come closer than we have in a very long time. Yeah. Also, something I wanted to note about Arizona, I spent from third grade through a couple years in college in Arizona. And here's what I know about Arizona conservatives. The thing that kept Arizona red for so long wasn't the idea of, you know, taxes or tax policy or anything like, you know, gay marriage or anti-LGBTQ plus stuff. The thing that kept Arizona red for a very long time was more of a libertarian point of view, more of a get the government the fuck out of my face. If I want to smoke weed,
Barry Goldwater spirit, that Barry Goldwater thing.
If I want to smoke weed and own a gun and be gay, get the fuck out of my life.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, really bad news for the current MAGA movement in Arizona. It was already bad news for election deniers in Arizona in 2020 and 2022. But I think they're also underestimating the animus of what kept Arizona red for so long.
That's the entire party. That's the entire nation. But you're so right. And again, Carrie Lake only helps in this regard, because at this point, the most reliable demographic Republicans have for that Senate seat are seniors. And Carrie Lake already showed that she knows how to alienate all of them by bad-mouthing John McCain, who they all voted for year after year after year. I mean, this is what happens when you let the clowns take over your party. When you let the inmates run the asylum, I mean, don't be surprised when this kind of dysfunction happens. And this is a fish rotting from the head down. This is all Trumpism. This is all the chaos and incompetence and double talk and jive and circular firing squads. Look at Mike Johnson and FISA this week. This is the chaos they vote for. Oh, boy. Isn't draining the swamp fun?
Yeah.
It's like the comment section came to life. The most ignorant, racist parts of the comments section came to life and took over the party.
Yeah. And the reason Arizona started going blue was because Democrats are showing more and more that they are actually the party of freedom.
It's true. It's really impressive.
So I think that you know, when you bring Roe into it, on top of everything else, health care, jobs, the amazing economy, which right now governors are getting most of the credit for, as opposed to President Biden.
Yeah, of course.
But I think that's going to make the difference in 2024, which is, again, an off-year election. We have an incumbent. And, you know, I was biting my nails in 2012, but it went our way.
So was I. I mean, I do believe Biden will be reelected. I think that there's a very good chance at the nominating convention they will be nominating a convicted criminal this time.
They have to.
They probably have to. And I think that there will most likely be another trial that will have started by the time the convention happens. I think there's a reasonable chance it'll be a contested convention. It's going to be chaos all the way. Biden just has to keep on, you know, being competent, doing his best, giving speeches as good as the one he gave at the State of the Union. But at the end of the day, Allison, the message I'm putting out there on SiriusXM and what I've come to believe, this is not another election between Biden and Trump. The media wants us to believe that with all their Donald Trump, he wants to have a violent overthrow of democracy. And Joe Biden thinks women should have control of their own bodies. Which one of these? They're both crazy. Get past that noise. It's an election between Trumpism and not Trumpism. That is what we're all voting on. I don't know. Joe Biden didn't get elected because everyone voted for Joe Biden. All those Republicans and liberals didn't vote for Joe Biden. They voted to be part of the coalition, the only coalition that could defeat Trumpism. That's what's on the ballot. And I think we should start viewing it more as the ultimate reality show election, where you, the voter, get to decide where Donald Trump goes for the next 4 years. You're not voting for who's going to be president. You're voting if Trump is going to the White House or the penitentiary. That is what you're voting on this year. What would be more fun to watch, Americans?
Yeah. And you know, with regard to a contested convention, the rules, the RNC rules, say that these electors, 1,215 of them, are bound on the first ballot to vote to nominate Donald Trump. So short a rule change at the RNC, which is now controlled by Lara Trump and that Whatley
right.
guy.
Beautiful.
I don't think that they can contest this. And I know that you were like, hey, I'd like to see him as the other person on the ticket. So I think you're going to get your wish, my friend.
I mean, I think that he is the, of all the Republicans who are running, I think he is the best shot for Joe Biden to beat, because Joe Biden has done it before. The one thing that concerns me is OPEC cutting production, because OPEC cutting production now means potentially $4 or $5 a gallon gas by the fall. And this is because the worst dictators in the world want Donald Trump. The Saudi Arabian dictators, the Russian dictators, that guy who runs Israel, Hamas wants him, Iran wants him, China wants him, Hungary wants him. All the worst autocrats in the world want Donald Trump because of his incompetence and his malleability.
Mm-hmm. And BB. BB wants him.
BB wants him bad.
All right, my friend, thank you so, so much for your discussion today. Everybody, you can catch Mr. Fuglesang on the Tell Me Everything show on Sirius XM Progress, channel 127, weeknights, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific, and the John Fuglesang podcast, wherever you get your pods. That's free. I appreciate your time today, and I look forward to speaking to you next week.
You're the best, Allison. Let's stop. Don't forget, everybody, stop and smell the train wreck. It's going to be really fun. You're going to have a better day than Donald Trump every day this year.
Yeah, for the rest of his life. Thank you, everybody. We have more good news on top of that. Stick around. We'll be right back. Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
Good news, good news. And if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, you want to play What the Fark is in Your Ark, which is where you send us a picture of your animal. This started off for new listeners to the Beans. Welcome. Welcome to the Leguminati. If you haven't been listening for a while, we used to have a game called What the Mutt, where you send in a photo of your adopted pup or, you know, your rescue pup, and we try to guess what breeds are in there. And if you've had a doggy DNA test done, we see how close we get. And, you know, you send us the answers and with the picture of the dog, and we try to guess. We're very terrible at this game. And it has taken on a life of its own to include cat breeds, cow breeds, opine on the bovine, they call it, horse breeds, what the heckwine, which I'm actually oddly very good at. We have what the shell, which is for some reason I know some turtle breeds as well. You send your turtle in. And then that became what's the model of your axolotl, which was coined by Dana Goldberg, who is out today. I miss her. She'll be back in your ears on Monday. And now it's really just send us a photo of an animal or a drawing of an animal, and we'll just try to guess what kind of animal it is or what color it is. Like, we've turned it into Celebrity Jeopardy because we're so bad at guessing dog breeds. But you can send in that or your pod pet for pod pet tax. And if you don't have a pod pet, you can send an adoptable pet in your area, and we'll see if we can help put you together with somebody to find a forever home for them. Also, self shout outs, shout out to a loved one, shout out to your kids, shit kids say. If you have a new and interesting swear word you want to share with us, we love those. If you have something like, I was today years old when I learned, or TIL, today I learned, I love those like new understandings of something. I remember the day that I realized that the Postal Service logo was an eagle and not a bird-headed man with his pants pockets turned out. That was an interesting day for me. And the way that I learned that was I saw the post office had a commercial with an eagle flying and the eagle landed and turned into the logo. And I was like, oh my fucking God, it's not a bird-headed man. Or the day I realized what a bird of paradise is supposed to depict. Anyway, those kinds of realizations are always fun if you have a thesis title, dissertation title. Also, today I sent it off to the White House, all of your student debt relief stories. If you have a student debt relief story, you could send it to us. Let us know if you'd rather us not send it to the White House. We keep you anonymous if you want, but they love getting these over there, and send those to us. And any other good news that you have, any really anything at all you want to send to us that you want us to know about, by going to dailybeanspod.com and clicking on contact. All right, first up from Brian, pronouns he and him. Not so much a correction as an answer to your implicit question about how to do greetings for Ramadan. Ramadan is a lunar month long. The normal greeting is Ramadan Mubarak, roughly, which is blessed Ramadan. The day after Ramadan ends is the holiday of Eid al-Fitr. The greeting is Eid Mubarak. They don't have a pronunciation here, key for me. There are cultural variants too, of course, but whatever you like to say is more than welcome. Thanks for thinking of us. You're welcome, Brian. Please send in a pronunciation guide for the greeting for the day after Ramadan ends. I would like to know how to pronounce that. I can probably Google it, but I just like when you guys send in stuff. Next up, Martha, pronouns she and her. One more eclipse story that happened on my birthday, and we got to see the totality, although it was very suspenseful. That is cloudy. It was cloudy leading up to it. My husband and I, and one of our kids with his family, drove 12 hours to stay in a cabin in a state park right in the path. Super fantastic. And did I say it was on my birthday? I am 69 now, which with one totality to my name. Love you too. So, of course, I'm a patron of all three pods. Keep doing what you do. Pod Pet Taxes Dash, a Bernie Doodle. No guessing required. Yes, you're right. No need to guess between this Bernie's and Poodle. Beautiful baby. Next up, Anna Marie, pronouns she and her. Dear Rienes de los Frijoles, as an educator, this is my response to people who are against student loan relief. Oh, good. I can't wait to hear this. For too long, a college education has been too expensive for too many people. Leaving the predatory student loan industry as is only results in fewer people going to college to get into important fields like healthcare and education, which typically don't pay enough to allow student loan borrowers to repay their loans without ending up owing many times what they borrowed. The system, as it is, results in fewer and fewer students choosing to go to college. If we allow this trend to continue, our country will not have enough folks to take care of our healthcare needs as we age, to educate our children and grandchildren, and to fill positions vital to the functioning of our many municipal, legal, and social systems in the future. With this in mind, wouldn't you rather support anything that encourages students to pursue their college dreams? In my opinion, student loan forgiveness does not nearly go far enough. We should be pushing hard for student loan reform, if not fully publicly funded education, ding, 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 for anyone who qualifies. Allison, why are we not talking about this more? Is the Biden administration looking at student loan reform? I would love to hear more about this if they're considering a plan. Yes, the Biden administration is looking at a free two-year college, free technical degrees, all that stuff. They're just, obviously, there was a lot of that stuff in the Inflation Reduction Act and the infrastructure bill, but Build Back Better had it, but it was stripped out so we could get Republicans to support it. So they have plans. There's just not nearly enough Democrats in Congress to get it passed right now. But they're working on it, working on getting more Democrats in Congress. But yes, we should be talking about that. I have long been an advocate for this. I know that I worked really hard when I was at the VA to get veterans. If they agreed to work for the VA as like physical therapists or physician assistants, nurse practitioners, stuff like that, if they agreed to work for the VA for a couple years, the VA would help them pay for school. In addition, because the GI Bill would pay for the rest of it. So all of these kinds of programs, They exist. They just aren't talked about that much in the media. Anna Marie goes on to say, finally, a shout out to a new I Hope listener. I sat next to a lovely person named Angela on the flight to Portland, Oregon, coming home from seeing the eclipse in Dallas. I enjoyed chatting with her. And when she mentioned her fears about the election this November, I had to tell her about the Daily Beans and how cathartic and hopeful it is. Angela, thanks again for being a wonderful seatmate. Maybe our paths will cross someday in Portland. I'll be there this summer for the July 10th live show. I'm so excited. Excellent. As always, thank you for reminding everyone that things are never as dark as they might seem. And there are many good people in our country working for democracy and fairness. For PodTax, I'm including a selfie of my husband and me on the plane. Look how adorable you are. And I love the hair color. That cotton candy pink is fucking fantastic. You both look incredible. And thank you for talking to Angela, your seatmate. Hi, Angela, if you're listening. Welcome to the Leguminati. All right. Next up from Anonymous, pronouns she and her. Dear AG and DG, I love the ongoing discussion following the April 9th feedback about county fairs. What I hear from you two is openness, humility, and willingness to learn coupled with common sense. Sensitivity is necessary, but let's not get so sensitive that we can't open our mouths and share. I was so happy when you invited people to send baby pictures of themselves because I keep wanting to delight Dana with pictures of my two delightful grandchildren, but I'm afraid of posting children's pictures anywhere online. Nobody can hurt baby me, who has been out of diapers for 70 plus years. So baby me picture attached. That brings up a newly learned sensitivity that I'm working on myself. You all commented on the lady who sent her baby picture and current picture looked much younger than 70. That, according to a mentor of mine, is a form of ageism. What I'm learning to say is you don't, instead of you don't look 70, is doesn't 70 year old you look vibrant and alive, which is to say, world, get used to it. This is what 70 looks like. Now I have to send you a current picture of me too. And I think I look young. No, strike that. I think I look like a vibrant 70 plus year old. Thanks for keeping on learning together how to honor stages of life as well as other life choices. Look at this. Absolutely fantastic. Beautiful, vibrant 70 plus. And your hair, super jelly. I can't grow hair like that. That's incredible. And the baby picture is adorable as well. I'll make sure Dana sees it. Thank you very much, Anonymous. Next up, Vicky, pronouns she and her. These dogs, oh my God. Greetings, ladies of the beans. I have a shout out today to a rescue where I volunteer. Nobody's perfect, dogs and cats. Perfect is spelled P-E-R-F-E-K-T at nobodysperfectdogs.org. We specifically care for hard to adopt animals that county shelters turn over, medically fragile or behaviorally challenged, typically. The photo here is a bonded pair of chihuahuas that came from a hoarding situation. They need to go together, but they are extremely wary around other pets, which makes finding them a home hard. They will reward the owner with great joy and affection, as you can see. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, please come and meet Sasha and Flash. They are adorable. So these are a bonded pair that must be adopted together, but need to be the only animals in the house. Thank you, Vicky. And anybody interested in the San Francisco area, go in and take a look. And again, it's called nobodysperfectdogs.org. And perfect is spelled P-E-R-F-E-K-T. Thank you very much. Next up from Tiffany. Hey, beans and legumes. I had a definitely awesome blue moment today. My niece, who is very red, in a family of blue, said something about moving to Arizona today, just as I'm listening to the pod. I said I would not move to Arizona as a woman at this point in time. And her response was, why? Arizona had been on most of the family's move list for many years. Right now, we live in New England. I went on to tell her what just had been said on the pod about them ending reproductive rights based on a law written ages ago. And she came back with, well, Trump said states can choose for themselves. So I brought up the 6-week rule in Georgia and the Texas ruling. He said, that's fucking crazy. And it felt like a bit of a breakthrough. I was so proud of her. I think it's, she said, that's fucking crazy. I was so proud of her and me for this moment I had to share. This same niece also just had a beautiful baby boy at the end of March, and I got to meet him for Easter. My husband and I do not have kids. I love my nieces and great nephews like they're my own kids, and I spoil them whenever I can. So here's a picture of my beautiful babies and one of me with the newest baby boy. And Tiffany, your photos didn't come through. I don't see them here, so I'll check on the producers with that, but maybe they just got lost in the electronic mail. Next up from Malia, pronounced she and her, pronounced Malia, almost like Maria with an L. My nearly 9-year-old autistic ADHD PDA child just ran into the living room screaming, "Mom, the Electoral College is fuck." He then proceeded to give me and my partner a clear and complete explanation about the problems with the Electoral College. I had no idea even he knew about the Electoral College, especially as Americans in Scotland. I am bursting with pride. Just one more note. I am a sociocultural researcher, PhD, exploring the lived experiences of what I call ghost parents. Those of us who have likely neurodivergent children who struggle to or cannot attend school. No formal diagnosis is needed. If anyone listening is a ghost parent or knows a ghost parent and would be willing to share your experience, please get in touch. I want to include a special invitation to racial and religious minorities and LGBTQIA plus families. The research has ethics approval from the university. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I'm ready to be creative to make participating in this research as accessible to as many people as possible. Representation matters. So we'll have a link in the show notes to contact Malia in Glasgow for this study. Malia, amazing. I look forward to the dissertation and the study when it's published. And finally, from Anonymous, pronouns he and him. Hello, ladies of the beans. I wanted to share a good news story with you about a stuffed animal my son loves. About 8 years ago, one night, my wife and I had to take our 6-year-old son to the hospital for some respiratory issues he was having. After a breathing treatment, he was fine. And while he was in the ER, one of the nurses gave him a little stuffed animal bunny. There's a volunteer group that has a few different sewing groups who make various animal design stuffed toys for patients. It helped comfort him while he was waiting in the ER. He took it home with him and slept with it every night. Our son is now 14, and a couple of weeks ago, the bunny got a rip in it. My son was really sad, but was trying to be grown up about it. The bunny wasn't completely destroyed, but it had to be moved from his bed to the basket on the top dresser. My wife tried searching on Etsy and other places for a replacement bunny, but no one had the same design. And then I had an idea. Someone I knew from high school worked at the hospital, and I sent her a picture of the bunny and asked if they still had one in the same design. And she found one just with a different pattern on the material and said our son was more than welcome to have it. Our son was very happy to get the new bunny for his bed while its predecessor is enjoying his retirement on top of the dresser. Thank you both so much for what you do. And thanks to Desiree and all the folks who work behind the scenes. Shout out for Desiree, one of our producers. Thank you. Thank you so much, Anonymous. And thanks to everybody for sending in your good news. You guys, I am now, I have 1.5 pages left in my second 5-subject notebook since 2021. Before that, I used index cards. So I have just ordered and received 2 new 5-subject notebooks for the next 3 years of reporting. It's always like I have this like super nerd, like office supply notebook, almost a fetish, where if I finish, I fill a notebook. I beam with pride. Like, I love that. I don't know why. You can't read a word in here. I can't even read my own writing. But I've got 2 of these suckers now filled with all of my show notes, all the notes I jot down on appearances whenever I appear on TV or radio or Sirius or the Steph Miller Show or wherever I do my appearances. I always have this notebook and I write down all of my show notes in it. And any shows that are missing is because I'm on the road and I'm using the hotel notepad and pen wherever I'm at. But I think it's, again, it's a synchronicity thing, right? Pete Strzok, who was there at the beginning of the Mueller investigation, me, who was there at the beginning in the kitchen table days with a podcast about Mueller, she wrote, a trial starting on Monday, stemming from a criminal investigation that started with the Mueller probe, and me starting with an entire new notebook to cover it. It's just a cool, I just love shit like that. And a total eclipse and an earthquake in New York. It's all coming together. Okay. I'm going to talk to you guys, obviously, on Sunday with Andy for the newest episode of the Jack podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and listen to Cleanup on Aisle 45. Again, that's where we're going to be covering most of this trial. And of course, Dana and I will be back in your ears on Monday. Until then, please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of the planet, take care of your mental health, take care of your family, vote blue over Q, and bring someone with you. I've been AG, and them's the beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com. MSW Media.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis' first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.